Hey, I'm Kevin.
Hey, I'm Johnny E.
Tune into our radio show, Philly Rock Live.
We play the classic hard rock and metal.
From the 70s and 80s.
We grew up on.
We play the new music those same bands are making today.
And we play new music from around the world.
Not to mention the great bands from our own local scene. You will not hear a mix of music like this anywhere else.
If it kicks ass,
we play it. Philly Rock Live.
Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. Philly time.
On PhillyRockRadio.com. Listen online with your mobile device or even your smart speaker.
And now. It's time for another edition of the Sports and Metal Podcast. We talk hard-hitting sports and bone-crunching metal. Sports and metal. Because sports and metal go better together. Now here's your host, Jason Voorhees. And Aaron Savage.
Ooh, yeah!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Sports and Metal Podcast. We are your hosts. This is Aaron Savage. With me, as always, my partner right over there, Mr. Jason Voorhees. And we have a very big show for you tonight. A lot to talk about in the sports world. But before we get started, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. First and foremost, longtime sponsor, La Terrain Watches. If you haven't checked out La Terrain, you're missing out. These are beautiful handcrafted watches at an amazing affordable price point. You want to make sure you visit their website, www.laterrain.com. That's www.laterraine.com. You're going to use our promo code SNM. That's the letters SNM as in sports and metal. And you're going to save 10% off your purchase at checkout. Our other sponsor we want to give a shout out to tonight is BetUS.com. Make sure you use our affiliate link. You could see it on the screen below me. And you're going to get 125% bonus on your first $100 bet. So make sure you visit BetUS. And while I'm plugging everybody, why don't I plug us? Make sure you visit our website, www.sportsandmetal.com, where you can get your fix on all things sports and metal. So without further ado, let's get started. How are you, Jay?
Friggin' awesome, man.
I'm glad, man. A lot to say when so much has gone on that is not been awesome in the sports world. And, you know, there's no bigger place to start than the NFL. There's just so much to talk about in the world of the National Football League, and no bigger story than the tragic event that took place on Monday Night Football in the Bills-Bengals game with DeMar Hamlin. If you're living under a rock and you don't know, but DeMar Hamlin went to make a tackle on T. Higgins. I think it was 6 minutes into the first quarter or thereabouts. You know, very, very, you know, mundane play. Nothing stood out about it. Nothing crazy. No big hits. But, you know, basically, you know, Hamlin tackles Higgins. Higgins' helmet did hit Hamlin's chest. It didn't look terribly hard, but it did make contact with his chest. You know, they go down. Hamlin gets back up, and for that split second, he seemed fine. Then he drops right back to the turf. Now we know he went into cardiac arrest, but when you were watching it in real time, you know, you really could tell that it was like, it looked like a heart attack. And it looks like something that, you know, you always think of it more as a baseball injury. You know, you always hear about these kids in Little League, you know, that get a fastball to the chest and they go into cardiac arrest. And it's scary because you hear these tragic stories of a lot of kids that die. And that's what this looked like. It's such an unusual football injury, Jay, right?
I mean, my first thought was like, you know, what is going on? And then you see them doing CPR, and like, it's crazy because I have personal experience with CPR. I actually saved a kid's life, and like, this watching this like automatically just brought me back to that moment. Like, it's crazy how these things do that in real time, and you know, obviously. Thank God DeMar is okay. I mean, you know, news came out today that he was on FaceTime with his team and basically told him that he loves them. And, you know, he's been able to talk to his family. So, I mean, considering where we were on Monday and where we're at right now, it's like, you
it's
know.
It's a miracle.
It is a miracle. I mean.
Listen, he's not out of the woods yet. I mean, no. We're just getting, you know, second, third hand reports. He's not out of the woods, but what we're hearing is phenomenal. Because listen, when the guy is, you know, getting CPR for 9 minutes, you know, you think of like lack of oxygen to the brain. I mean, I'll tell you, this NFL season has been so crazy, Jay. You know, obviously we have our fantasy football league that you and I are in together. This is the first time in my life that I've ever gotten two texts in the same year from people in our fantasy football group or anywhere, like where we're watching a game and somebody texts, is he dead? Like, seriously. I mean, it's crazy the stuff we've seen this year in the NFL. The Tua game is the other one I'm referring to, which also involved the Cincinnati Bengals. The Dolphin game, when Tua, you know, went into that fencing position when he got concussed. I mean, people were texting me, is he dead? I mean, and this is the same type of situation. It's scary, scary stuff. And the thing is, the hit on Tua was a lot more vicious. This was DeMar, you know, Hamlin making a tackle. It just didn't, it wasn't something you expected to see. It just shows how, you know, life can be turned up on its head in a drop of a dime. You know, anything could happen. You know, it's scary when you think of life. I mean, this kid's 24 years old. And, you know, a world-class athlete, you would never expect something like this to happen. And if it is what we're, it's like cordis something, I forget the scientific term, but it's basically when you get like, you know, a compression to the chest or an impact to the chest at the exact moment, you know, on a particular part of your heartbeat, and it creates like an electrical impulse or interferes with the electrical impulse of the heart. Again, I'm not a doctor, so don't hold me to what I'm saying, but something along those lines where it's like a very, it's like a one in a million chance that it like messes with the, you know, electrical pulse of your heart and throws it off and you can go into cardiac arrest. And like I said, I mean, it's also something you really only ever see. It's like a baseball injury. And even it's like one in a billion there. I mean, it's just such a freak thing that happened. You know, for all the talk we talk about the NFL with concussions and all the rule changes and this and that, this was something that, you know, was not something that could be prevented. This is, it's a freak occurrence. You know, it's crazy, crazy, crazy. It just kind of sums up the insanity of the season that's been the NFL this year. And if you would have talked to me on Tuesday that this guy would be awake and FaceTiming his teammates, I would have never thought it.
No, you know? I mean, I did want to bring up, I did think, you know, obviously Bill's coach and, you know,
Sean McDermott, coach,
they both agreed they were not coming out to play that game. But like, part of me is a little still annoyed with the NFL because I believe if the NFL had their way, they wanted to play that game still. And that to me shows you how bad the NFL is as far as, you know, the way that they treat these situations. And yes, I get it that you can't be prepared for that. Nothing could have prepared anybody, let alone the NFL in its entirety for that moment. But like, those kind of situations are extremely traumatic. I mean, think about what T. Higgins is going about through. I mean, we've put all our energy on DeMar and rightfully so. I mean, he's the guy that was almost dead. But like T. Higgins, like the guilt and the amount of, you know, criticism that he was getting from not only people on the internet and social media, but like even certain media personalities.
Well, I'm lucky. I didn't see any of that criticism. You know, maybe I was in a bubble. I didn't see
it. It's crazy that he would even have to go through that. And like, you know, it's one of them things where it's like people need to realize, like, dude, this is traumatic stuff. Like, even fans that watch that could have some form of PTSD from watching that. Being in the moment of seeing somebody almost die is not something that's to be taken lightly. And the NFL, like, I couldn't believe it that they were like, they were talking about, you know, making it a 5-minute thing and then having the team come back. And I'm glad that those players and coaches came together at that moment.
Yeah,
and said, no,
I know. I agree 100%. There was no way they were going to be able to continue that game. I mean, I'd like to give the NFL the benefit of the doubt. I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt, like that maybe they didn't realize the gravity of the situation when it first was transpiring in real time, when you first heard that they were considering continuing with the game. I don't think maybe they understood the gravity of it. And then once it became clear what was going on, they realized, hell no, we can't go on. And then obviously then when the coaches and players, you know, spoke up as well. So I'll give everybody, I hate this world that we live in where everything's finger pointing. So I'm not going to go there. But yeah, if they had continued, it would have been insanity. But I just think there was no way they were going to. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. And you know what? I'm going to go into my next thing. You know, I'm going to parlay it into the next subject here. You know, in light of the situation with DeMar, the NFL has this new playoff format. There we go. I'm having an issue with my banners here, but neither here nor there. So the NFL has announced a new playoff format in light of this DeMar Hamlin situation, because rather than decide to continue the Bills-Bengals game, they've decided to cancel it altogether. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I think it's totally ridiculous the way that they're going about it. Like, I saw the different ideas that the NFL proposed, and I think, you know, the Bengals coach, I'm drawing a blank. I always draw a blank about his name. The Bengals coach,
Zach Taylor?
Zach Taylor had an excellent point. You sent it to me earlier, and I read it. And he basically said, like, you know, any other time it would be predicted by the points, you know.
Well, yeah, it would be okay. So we're getting ahead of ourselves, and in case the viewers don't know,
okay.
The NFL has a new playoff format, and basically the way it's going to work is, okay, so basically because they're not going to make the game up, if the Bengals beat the Ravens this weekend, they're going to finish with an 11-5 record, which would be 16 games, because they're not playing that 17th game, which would be the Bills game. And the Ravens will finish with an 11-6 record. So if we go by the traditional way that tiebreakers are determined in the NFL to determine playoff seeding, winning percentage would be where we would defer, right? So 11-5 is a better winning percentage than 11-6. So based on that, if we're not going to play the game, we're not going to make up the Bills-Bengals game now, the Bengals, you would think, would have the automatic, you know, advantage based on winning percentage. But they're not going to do that. They're going to determine the wild card destination by a coin flip. So basically, even though the Bengals are going to have a better record if they beat the Ravens this weekend, they're not going to have destiny in their own hands. It's going to be determined by a coin flip, like as if it was a tie, which is crazy. So yeah, let's go back here. The NFL announced one-year-only alterations to the AFC playoffs on Friday afternoon in the wake of the DeMar Hamlin injury and canceled game in Cincinnati. The league announcement itself is word soup, but the gist of it is the AFC championship game could be played at a neutral site based on the AFC's final standings. And, you know, credit to Chris Mason here from MassLive.com. I'm reading his article here. So here are the scenarios for that in layman's terms. Buffalo and Kansas City win this weekend. Buffalo and Kansas City play in the AFC championship game at a neutral site. Buffalo and Kansas City lose this weekend, and Cincinnati loses or ties again. Buffalo and Kansas City play the AFC championship game at a neutral site. Buffalo and Kansas City lose and Cincinnati wins. Buffalo or Cincinnati play Kansas City at an AFC championship neutral site. However, there's another measure that's sure to irritate the 11-4 Bengals, which is the aforementioned what we were just talking about. If they lose to the 10-6 Ravens this weekend and face Baltimore in the first round, their wild card destination would be determined by a coin flip, despite having a better record, 11-5 versus 11-6. That'll happen if Baltimore wins Sunday and is the number 6 seed, with Cincinnati as the number 3 seed. It's very convoluted, bottom line. And you know what?
Okay. I mean,
just like we said, it would have made no sense to continue that game that night. That was an impossibility. I think now, you know, we're getting toward a week. DeMar Hamlin is recovering. Life happens. You know, there's still a football season that's going to be played. It's not like all the other teams are canceling their games. I think they should make that game up, dude.
Aaron.
And if they're not going to make it up, then they should determine on winning percentage. But then again, that isn't necessary. Just like it's not fair to do this to the Bengals now with the coin flip, it's not necessarily fair to do it to the Ravens if they don't make the game up, because who's to say what would have happened in that game?
This and Aaron, I get it. You wanted to give the NFL the benefit of the doubt, but I'm telling you, every single year you see more and more stupidity by the NFL. Like, to me, you had a COVID year where you backed up the playoffs. You expanded playoffs. You pushed things out. This is all about money, Aaron. It's all it is. It's the bottom line, and it's what drives the mentality of the NFL, and that's why it's ridiculous. You are completely screwing two fan bases, two teams that have realistically played superior in that league.
Well, now, again, I have to play devil's advocate. Now, I tend to agree the NFL is all about money, but this particular circumstance, while I think it's the wrong decision, what makes this decision about money? Honest question.
Because they're worried about having to push games out in venues. The major thing is they don't want to screw up the schedule, but like you could realistically not have that week off between the Super Bowl
That's my point. Wouldn't they make more money making up the Bills Bengals game?
You could either.
I don't know if it's about money. I think it's stupidity. Regardless, I just thought maybe money is not the example here, but it's a mistake.
Maybe I'm using the wrong.
Yeah, it's a mistake. It's a mistake.
I just think the NFL is just it just continues to make stupidity like their middle name. It really is. It's because every time I look at it, every time they have a decision, it's always something that's like, why are you doing this? Like, what? Why can't you make the game up? I get it that you didn't want to make it up now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a Lamar situation, but now, okay, now he's progressively getting better. You're going to play week 18 now. Exactly. Why not just skip to let the Bills and Bengals play the following week and then push the playoffs back? It can be done. There's nothing that says it can't be done.
After we got through COVID with all the rescheduling,
this is what I mean.
No fans in the stands. Anything could be done.
Just when you think baseball was bad in baseball and how they handle situations, it's like the NFL says, hold my beer. It's like,
yeah, you're right. You're right. Anyway, let's continue with some more NFL talk. I mean, it was like bigger news before Damar Hamlin, but it's still big news that's worth talking about. My Miami Dolphins, Jay. I mean, we have to talk about it. I know you're an Eagles fan, but this is like such a big story. I feel like we just have to talk about it. How can the Dolphins have gone from 8-3 and the number one seed in the AFC to facing an 8-9 season if they lose this weekend to the Jets, looking out, not making the playoffs? Dude, it's an epic collapse. I mean, it's crazy to me. And look, let's be honest. A lot of it has to do with the Tua injuries, the concussions. They did have the losing streak. It started when Tua was playing. But let's be honest, the Bills game was epic. They easily could have won that game. And, you know, a couple of calls go a different way. They probably do win the game in Buffalo. They just played like shit against the Chargers. So sometimes teams lay an egg. Chalk that one up. They lost to a very good Niners team. You can't fault them for that. But then it was the Packers loss that really like was the run. That was the one. Of all the losses, that was like, wow, they should have destroyed the Packers. And they were about to blow the Packers out. I think they were about to take a 27-7 lead or something at the half when Mostert fumbled, right? So now you lose that touchdown because they were right about to score going into the half. And then the Packers got points off of that. Now, granted, it's been 2 weeks, so I might be forgetting a little bit of the detail here. But the Packers get points off of that. And the whole trajectory of the game changed from there. And then the Dolphins still had a chance to win the game late. But, you know, again, here we are. Tua is out now going on 2 weeks with another concussion because he fell on his head again in that game. He threw the three late picks that basically sealed Miami's fate against the Packers. And, you know, looking back in defense of Tua, I think obviously now we didn't know then, but now we realize he was playing with a concussion for that last drive, those last couple drives when he had the terrible throws because he was playing great up until that point. You know, then it was like, what is he doing? Like, those interceptions, Jay, were so bad that it was like watching a rookie in his first game. Like, you would not have expected somebody that's in their third year in the pros to be throwing those interceptions. They were embarrassingly bad. But then in the post game, when they asked Tua about it, he said on the one, he goes, you know, I may have called the wrong play. So obviously, the way Tua couldn't even remember the plays, that's when they started questioning that maybe he was concussed, which he was, obviously. So we'll give him a little pass on that as far as Tua goes. But, you know, there's so much more to it. There's like, dude, Dolphins, you know, they have games where they're gashing opponents for 5, 6, 7 yards per carry. And then on 3rd and 2, 3rd and 1, they're calling throw plays. When all you do is got to get 1 yard, run the ball. Like, Mike McDaniel, what are you doing? And I love the guy. He's been a great addition. He's been a great coach, but this losing streak kind of exposed him for the rookie coach that he is, because it's like the things that were working early, when they stop working, you need to adjust, and he hasn't. And so there's just been so much between the two concussions, the play calling from McDaniel, a couple of bad calls, the injuries. Obviously, they also played the last game without Terron Armstead, without Bradley Chubb, without Xavier Howard, which was another big issue that I had against the Patriots last weekend. You're playing your biggest game to the year at this point because the Jets lost. All you needed to do was win, and you're in the playoffs last week, right? Without Tua, this was. Keep in mind, Tua was hurt. So, again, Teddy Bridgewater started this game. How many games have we had our second and third string quarterback out there? So, but we still had a chance to win this game. But you have three superstars that warm up before the game, all with questionable tags. Not one plays the game. I have a problem with that too, Jay. These are the guys you're paying to show up when you need them the most. Now, I get it. Guys get hurt. We're talking about injuries today, right? I get it. But these guys are good enough to warm up and be game-time decisions, and not one says, yo, I'm going to gut it out for my team when we need a win to make the playoffs today. I got a problem with that. I got major issues with a lot of this shit, Jay. And, you know, I want to kind of parlay it into your team a little bit. So we'll do a little NFC talk here. Because as bad as the Dolphins have looked when Tua hasn't played, and, you know, we were talking about Tua in the MVP conversation when they were 8-3. You know, so, and then he was hurt again and, you know, the losing streak, yada, yada. Things change, right? They've changed for Jalen Hurts as far as MVP. That ship has sailed. Like, he was my MVP, but now he's missed a couple of games. And the crazy thing is, dude, the Eagles haven't looked much different than the Dolphins when the Dolphins don't have Tua. The Eagles look very similar without Hurts to the Dolphins without Tua. That's my hot take, dude. Now, Hurts is going to be back this week, but it's much needed because I'm telling you, the Eagles have not looked good the last couple of weeks. What are your thoughts? I did my Dolphins rant. What are your thoughts on the Eagles with this?
I mean, first and foremost, I think you make a valid point. I think Jalen Hurts, I think that's all the more reason why he is the MVP. Obviously, he probably
I agree. That's what I had said about Tua, but we both have to concede now.
I guess because he missed games, he probably won't get it. However, if he does come back and they do win this game and it gets them, best record.
Yeah, they'll be the one seed if they win.
Number one throughout the playoffs, then maybe he still does get MVP, because that to me just would show you, wow, he is that much of a factor. Now, listen, I'm a guy that I'm not a huge Gardner Minshew fan, but coming into the year when the Eagles got Gardner Minshew a couple years back, I thought he was one of the better backups in the league. I mean, I think Teddy Bridgewater's probably one of the better backups as well. There's not too many good backups. Look at most teams when their starting quarterback goes down. They are horrible. And Gardner Minshew, in his own right, didn't play bad in either of those games. He actually played okay, but the Eagles lost both games. And if you watched the games, and I know you did, because I know you were off. I know you watched the Eagles.
I was watching the games.
Christmas Eve when they played Dallas. And that game, realistically, we should have won that game. The Eagles beat themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you give up a 3rd and 30? They had them at 3rd and 30, dude. How many 3rd and 30s get made in a play, not let alone a play that makes it for a touchdown? That was unacceptable for the Eagles defense to give up that play, because they had that game in the bag, even with Gardner Minshew. You lose that game. Now it puts all the pressure on last week. Now, I thought Jalen Hurts would have played last week, but I think in the Eagles' minds, they were like, oh, my God, we're so much better than the Saints. We can live with giving Hurts another week off. Well, it didn't work out too well.
That was the game where they looked much more exposed. Yeah.
And not only did that hurt them in this season, that cost them a lesser draft pick. They would have had a higher draft pick if they beat the Saints. Remember, we have their first round pick.
That's true.
Which was a top five pick.
Yeah, that's true.
Last week, and now it's probably like a 10th pick.
Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. You're right.
Yeah, so I I'm a little annoyed, Aaron, but I think I'm a little bit in a better position than the Dolphins.
Obviously, by far. The Eagles set themselves up where they can get away with this. It's going to be interesting. Will the Giants rest everybody? So the Eagles seem like they're in the driver's seat. Giants probably aren't going to play anybody.
I mean, I hope so.
They're already in the playoffs. And they're not going to gain anything by winning this game. So they're not going to risk hurting Saquon. You know what I mean? So Eagles should roll with this. But I'll tell you, I can't believe that Dallas is even in the conversation.
I mean,
they really came up, dude. They really did.
Well, the thing about Dallas is that they've had a good defense for a couple of years. I mean, Micah Parsons is one of those players that could be like a generational type player. Like, obviously, it's too early to say that. And I know we threw that term around loosely, but Micah Parsons, he has that like dog mentality to him, and he's a playmaker. You think of guys, you look at past guys at that position, Ray Lewis. I mean, obviously Ray Lewis was a linebacker, but Micah Parsons, even though he's a defensive end, he plays kind of all around the field. He's a guy that rushes the passer. But, you know, guys like Michael Strahan, those kind of names, like Micah Parsons is on that level if he continues on the track. He's that kind of player. They have a good defense. The whole thing with Dallas has always been that. Dak Prescott in the regular season actually plays very well. It's his playoffs that's very suspect. I think they have one playoff win in like 7 years.
It's interesting you're saying this, though. Dak's interceptions, what has he got, 14 interceptions?
And
he's missed, what, 4 or 5 games?
Woo. I mean, listen, I think Dallas is definitely –
they're winning on the backs of Tony Pollard and Zeke.
I think the team, to me, if you're going to ask – if you asked me today, and I still think the Eagles are superior because I think even though they've lost their last two, they can't be 13-3 and be a bad team. I mean,
no.
They beat some very good teams on the
Eagles are going to be fine if Hurts is in there.
I think the team that scares me the most is the 49ers.
I was just going to say, you know,
and they scare me because they do scare me because they have a great defense. They have the best defense, not a great. They have the best defense in the NFL. And they have a great balanced attack. They're rushing. They have got, I mean, they added Christian McCaffrey and they got Elijah Mitchell, who was their starter. He's back from injury. So they have a 1-2 punch. And Brock Purdy's playing out of his mind. Now, I saw their coach saying something about maybe, what's his name, comes back. I don't know why they would want to bring Jimmy G back.
I didn't hear that.
Well, yeah, I saw a thing on Twitter. Like, okay. And he said it's a possibility.
I'm not denying it, but I see no reason the way Purdy's been playing.
I just don't get why you would make a change when Purdy's played well.
Yeah, you know what? Harkens back to those Patriots. You know, we've seen some comparisons.
I mean, we talked about it. We talked about it last show. And listen, I do think the Niners are the best competition. I look at the Vikings, and the Vikings, in their wins, they've been dominant. Like, every single team that they've beat.
They're a fugazi team.
And they did have that comeback win. But remember, the Eagles played them early in the season, and they dominated the Vikings.
Yeah, nah, so, dude, the Vikings are fugazi. The Dolphins had Minnesota beat with Skylar Thompson as their starting quarterback, and the only reason Miami lost that game was because Jaylen Waddle fumbled at the end. That was another one of those games when they lost, when they had Tua out. And they another one. So I'm not sold on the Vikings at all, dude. I'm not at all. Anyway, why don't we move on a little bit? Another story that, like, it's kind of like something that's, like, been a big national story lately, but kind of everything with else going on kind of backburnered. But let's talk about it, dude. Carlos Correa, top free agent, MLB. Dude, have you ever seen anything like this? He signed, what, a 13-year, $350 million deal with the Giants, pending his physical. They get the physical done. Dude, literally, he's dressed. He's in his suit. He's in San Francisco for the press conference to be announced as a Giant. When the Giants say, "Oh, we have a hang up here with your physical." Like, literally, that's how close he was to being announced as a new member of the team. All of a sudden, the Mets swoop in at 4 a.m. that next morning and sign him to a 12-year, $350 million deal. You know, because the Giants weren't not going to sign him necessarily, but they had reservations. They weren't going to finalize the deal. Well, Correa's camp, obviously Scott Boras is his agent, says, you know what? We're going to look at other offers then. Because apparently the Mets had an offer for Correa, but he had already committed to the Giants, so he wanted to be loyal because he had already committed. So he said, sorry, you know, Mets, you know, you came in a little too late here. Well, now because the Giants said, oh, we have a problem with your physical, he jumped back to the Mets. Nobody saw this coming. This was 2 weeks ago. The Mets still haven't finalized the deal for the same reason. A hang up with his physical for an ankle surgery he had back in 2014 when he was in the minor leagues and he had a metal plate inserted into his ankle. What's interesting, he's never been on the DL in the major leagues because of that ankle. But something's coming up in the physical that makes teams concerned. You know, if you're signing a 10, 12-year deal that, hey, you know, year 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, we might have major concerns that this ankle is going to be a problem. And what I find so interesting is it's not like he's been super healthy, not even counting the ankle. He's had when is the last time Carlos Correa has played a full season and had like 600 at-bats? Has he ever?
I don't think so.
That's crazy, dude. I don't know. I just wanted to at least touch on it because I personally have never seen anything like it. I mean, once maybe, but not twice.
I read a report today that the Mets are ready to walk away. Like,
yeah, and the Twins crazy. Might swoop back in. I'm going to say something that's going to shock you. I'm a Mets fan, right? I honestly think it would be good for baseball if the Mets deal doesn't work and the Twins come swoop them in. This shows you how unbiased I am. Obviously, I'm a Mets fan. Oh, let's sign everybody. No, it's not good for baseball. It would be better for the sport if the small market Twins swoop in the night and sign this guy to a 10-year deal after he played a year with them, because nobody would expect it.
I got to be honest with you, dude. I think you're right. I think it's bad for baseball that a few of the big teams are spending all the money on teams.
Yeah, it's not good.
Other teams are not spending any money. Like, think about it. Pittsburgh Pirates, their roster, their whole roster for the past 10 years doesn't match what the Mets roster is this season.
Yeah, as far as salary goes.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Like, this is the problem. I've said it, and you know you agree with me. They need a salary floor. If they're going to have a tax, for the teams that go over it, they need to have a floor.
And even more so when you're talking about the luxury taxes that these teams are paying.
They're benefiting from it.
Let's call a spade, dude. This isn't like when the Yankees were just spending endlessly and other teams weren't. Now you have a number of teams. Now, obviously, the Mets now, this particular year with Steve Cohen under, you know, the new owner, this is his second year owning the team. He's really now starting to put his stamp on it. He's spending in ways we've never seen before. But – you know, now that he's over the highest tax threshold, he's paying 90 cents on the dollar in luxury tax. 90 cents on the dollar. This is money that gets funneled back that small market teams can benefit from and spend.
And what are they doing? What are they doing with the money? Where's the money going?
I know. It's crazy.
Where the freak is the money going, Aaron?
It's crazy.
Up their nose?
Pocketing the money, man.
Investing
in their team. Yeah. It's fucking nuts,
I mean,
dude.
Come on.
Anyway, brother, enough sports. Let's get into some music. And obviously, the way we're going to do that this week is by jumping into our picks of the week. Anyway, I guess we'll stick with what typically works. And I'll go first. How's that sound?
Sounds like a freaking awesome plan, brother.
All right. So my pick of the week this week is not an album. It's actually a concert that took place on December 16th in Los Angeles at the Microsoft Theater. And it was the Metallica Helping Hands concert and auction. And it was to benefit their All Within My Hands Foundation. You might ask, what is All Within My Hands? Again, that's obviously Metallica's foundation. I just said that. They're a nonprofit philanthropic organization created by the members and management of Metallica, dedicated to creating sustainable communities by supporting workforce education, the fight against hunger, and other critical local services. The 2021-22 school year marked the third year of Metallica Scholars Initiative. Together with their partners, the American Association of Community Colleges, they've grown from 10 schools to 23 across the United States, supporting a variety of career and technical education programs through a total of $4.1 million in grants. So in layman's terms, basically they support the trades. You know, they're looking to find kids and you know, provide grants and scholarships to kids that want to learn to be HVAC technicians, mechanics, things that the country needs to keep moving, right? They also, you know, donate in the fight against hunger. Metallica has made supporting local food banks a priority for years. The creation of All Within My Hands with Feeding America has enabled them to take giving to the next level. Food banks are the main focus of our day, of their Days of Service and Month of Giving events, and are also the primary recipients of funds raised through ticket sales while the band is on tour. So I'm just giving you a little background of what All Within My Hands is, what they do. And my pick of the week is, again, the concert that just took place. And, dude, it was freaking awesome. Obviously, it's for a good cause, as I just explained to you. But it's just awesome. And you can check it out. It, like I said, it took place on December 16th. But you can check it out now in its entirety on Paramount Plus. And that's my pick of the week. Dude, a who's who of rock royalty was there, including Matt Sorum. It was hosted by Jimmy Kimmel. Greta Van Fleet opened the show. And, dude, Metallica did two sets. They did an acoustic set, and they did an electric set. It was awesome. It was really, dude. They did an acoustic version of Blackened. That was phenomenal. Like, you can't picture Blackened acoustic. I may have heard them do it once or twice in years past. I remember I had this, like, they did a radio show in LA years ago, and they did a bunch of acoustic stuff. And I remember they even had the dude from Blues Traveler out there in there with them in the studio. I can't remember if they did Blackened or not. They may have. My mind's blank. But they did it on this fucking show, and it was awesome. 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 Another highlight, I've talked about it once before. You know, Metallica, back in 2020, released their second S&M album with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. And on that record, they did a reworked version of the Saint Anger track, All Within My Hands. Now, Saint Anger to me is awful, garbage. And All Within My Hands is a song on that record that I can't stand in its original form on the record. It sounds like Metallica trying to be System of a Down, and it's just all over the place. But they reworked it, and I kind of dug it on the S&M. But on this concert, they do it without the orchestra, so it's a little more guitar-oriented. Dude, it's awesome. It's like a completely different song than the All Within My Hands that you heard on Saint Anger. It's even got a ripping guitar solo from Kurt. Dude, so there's definitely highlights of the show. They do a lot of Thin Lizzy stuff. They do, obviously, the one you'd expect, Whiskey in the Jar, but they also do Borderline. It's just an awesome show. So that's my pick of the week. Check out the Metallica All Within My Hands benefit concert. You can check out the full show on Paramount Plus. They also did the live debut of the new single, Lux Aeterna. That's my pick of the week. Metallica, All Within My Hands, Paramount Plus. Check it out.
It's getting me pumped up for the freaking tour, dude.
I'm glad, dude. What do you got for us tonight, Shay?
So my pick of the week, as you know, I've kind of been getting into the death metal scene as of late. You know, huge Arch Enemy fan. I've always loved Children of Bodom. And I actually was just kind of going back through their catalog. And I, you know, I always just try to check out something new every week, and sometimes for this segment, pick of the week. And I happened to notice this one song, and I'm like, oh my God, Children of Bodom? Oops, I did it again? Britney Spears?
Britney Spears?
So I go back and I play it, and I'm like, holy crap, this song's awesome. So anyway, my pick of the week is the album Skeletons in the Closet. It came out in 2009. It's basically a compilation album. It's all covers, and it's a wide array of different genres. I mean, you're talking about, they cover the Creedence Clearwater Revival, Looking Out My Door, Hell Is for Children by Pat Benatar. I mean, then you got Somebody Put Something in My Drink by the Ramones, which that's like a friggin' punk is, you know, yep. You're a punk guy. Mass Hypnosis by Sepultura. So you got a little bit of, you know, hardcore metal there. Don't Stop at the Top from the Scorpions. Silent Scream. So you got some Slayer in there. She Is Beautiful from Andrew W.K.
Yep.
Like, I mean, this album is just like, it's such a wide range. Like, it's some metal, some like just rock and roll. You got the, you know, Kenny Rogers in the First Edition. Just dropped to see what condition my condition was in. Bed of Nails from Alice Cooper. That's one of my favorites. Hellion from Blackie Lawless and Wasp. Aces High. Iron
and hence the title, Skeletons in the Closet, man. It's all their influence.
The Rebel Yell happens to be my favorite. I think they nailed it. They nailed it. It sounds almost to the T. And the solo is phenomenal. Like, they do it, you know, a spinoff of the solo that's above and beyond what the regular solo is.
Let's not get crazy. Steve Stevens is a legend.
But it's awesome. But it's awesome. They also did a cover of a cover by covering Antisocial from Anthrax, which was a cover of Trust. So, and then Talk Dirty to Me from Poison. I mean, dude, like I said, 17 songs. I think there's a European version that has 19 songs. I think you shared a song that they did another song.
I forget what track that was.
But anyway, that's my pick of the week. If you like covers, yes, it's a death metal band playing, but they are musically talented. They are supremely talented.
Unbelievable music.
Aaron will agree with that as much as he doesn't like the death metal. So that's my pick of the week. Skeletons in the Closet. Yes, I have them.
Children of Bodom.
Children of Bodom.
Awesome pick, Jay. Anyway, we want to thank everybody for checking us out again this week. It's been a great show. Look forward to seeing you next week. I'm not going to make the big announcement live yet, but we do expect to have a very special guest next week. You're going to hear more about that on social media as we get closer to the episode. So tune in next week. In the meantime, I want to give a shout out again to La Terrain Watches. Visit their website, www.laterrain.com. Use our promo code SNM at checkout. Save 10% off your purchase. And check out betus.com. Use our affiliate link, bit.ly/sportsandmetal, capital S and capital M. You're going to get 125% bonus on your $100 deposit. And as always, check out our website, www.sportsandmetal.com, to get all your fix on sports and metal. And you can check out this podcast, past episodes, and episodes of our other podcast, And the Gavel Will Rock. So as always, guys, it's been a pleasure. We're glad you were here to join us. We hope you enjoyed the show. And until next time, rock on.
Peace out.
And that's our show. Tune in next time for more sports and metal. With Jason Voorhees and Aaron Savage.
Ooh, yeah.
Got something to say? Hit us up at sportsandmetal0423@yahoo.com or on Twitter @sportsandmetal.